Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back for another episode. It is another jam-packed show of stuff and things. Right, Clay?
Yeah, it's been a hell of a week. I mean, just all the way around, you know, especially since Saturday. But it's been a hell of a week and lots to talk about.
Yeah, it sure has. We're going to get right into it right after this. Mike, so we've got, you know, we've the obvious larger than life looming topic, which is going to be Israel, of course, but we're going to get to that in a minute. First, I'm going to talk about what came up, something that you and I discussed an episode or two ago. And I'm telling you, we are like right on top of these things. It's crazy. RFK Jr. is switching to independent. He's leaving his party, going independent. What do we think of this, Clay?
So, like you said, we've talked about this before in double context. One is, you know, he was a viable candidate challenger, you know, within the Democratic Party to the president. So that in and of itself was something that we had talked about. But we'd also talked about the impact of a third party candidate on this election. And you know, not necessarily knowing what the impact is going to be, but it's definitely going to take votes away from someone. Right. I know that there's been, you know, quick reaction from both parties, and neither one of them has been good because I think they both fear the Ross Perot effect. You know, you and I talked about that, that he will suck votes away from both parties. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I mean, this is the way our system works, but, you know, he could very well, by running as a viable independent candidate, hand the election to one party or the other. We just don't know which one it is.
Right. And that's what makes it scary. And that's why people are up in arms about it. You know, I know there's plenty of people think this is a great thing to happen, that this is what needs to happen. And, you know, like everything in the world, there's pros and cons to things. But yeah, this is, you know, at the very least, this is a very disruptive, you know, to say the least, right?
Yeah, disruptive for sure. You know, as a, again, a viable independent candidate, the votes have to come from somewhere. Now, again, we've said this too. We're a year plus away. He could very easily drop out at any point between now and then, although he is pretty committed. He gave a pretty impassioned speech the other day. And then, you know, I think within 24 hours came out and said, hey, I'm going to run as an independent, or maybe even simultaneously. But it's going to put a crinkle into everybody's plan, you know, and it's the RNC is looking at it with a field of 13 or whatever it is. I think we're down to 12 already. We had another one that dropped out. Hurd, I think, dropped out yesterday or the day before. So we're, you know, that's whittling itself down and more will fall out of that. But, you know, the RNC has a bigger pool to play with. You know, the Democrats obviously are going to continue to run with the president until they're not. We've talked right. about that too, you know, the potential for him dropping out late, being replaced with somebody else, anybody from, you know, your buddy Kamala to, you know, former First Lady Obama, you know, as a potential candidate, among others. So it is definitely, you've got headquarters are scrambling right now. Everybody, RNC, DNC, they are scrambling right now to look at really what the impact of this thing is going to be. And it's going to be really fun to watch it play out.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's definitely a grab your popcorn and sit back moment. And we've had nothing but those moments throughout this whole thing. And you know, like you said, we've still got some time to go here. So my goodness, how many pony shows are they going to bring to this circus?
It is a grab your popcorn. It really is going to be because I don't see him dropping out. You know, he's got family name recognition. He's got family right. money. He's going to get support from, you know, independents, Democrats, Republicans who are really kind of centrists. He's going to get a lot of that. I think he's going to hang in this for a long time. I don't know if he'll make it to, you know, final election day and really pull some electoral votes, but he's going to stay in this thing long enough to make it interesting.
Yeah, definitely. There's no question about it. And I do in that weird way, look forward to seeing where this will go, because, you know, it's yet another, and not to say that candidates haven't switched parties or switched allegiances or any of those things. It's not to say that those things haven't happened, but it's tremendously interesting that someone with his lineage, with that name, is doing this. So, you know, that in and of itself is pretty interesting and something to watch. And you know, I think you're right. I think he's going to pull some votes from everywhere. People who are sick and tired with their party, people who just want to stick it to the other party. It's going to be interesting for sure.
Yeah, it'll be fun. You know, the name recognition and really his departure from the Democratic Party as a Kennedy, and really the last political Kennedy, I guess, you know, kind of mucking around out there. And I've heard some, you know, references lately, which is very weird, coincidental, I guess, references to real Republicans and or real Democrats. I don't know exactly what those are, but I've seen that those terms float around social media a lot lately. And to have somebody who, you know, by name recognition, by family lineage, to depart the Democratic Party, it will be interesting to watch the messaging. That's something everybody should watch, is the messaging from both the Republicans and the Democrats about their, you know, how they see or how they talk about RFK Jr. And who he is, because he can't be a Democrat anymore, or he won't be a Democrat anymore. So obviously they're going to lambast him, and the Republicans will lambast him as well. So that'll be, again, very interesting to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see some, maybe it'll inspire more rebranding down the line. We'll see what happens, yeah. Right?
Yep, for sure.
All right, we called that first. We got dibs on that. Everybody's going to come back to us and say, you guys were right. You called it.
Yep, another one. Score another one for us.
Another one. Yep. It's no wonder we're number one podcast. Oh, wait, we're not? That's crazy.
It's okay. Yeah.
It's okay. That's all right. We forgive all of you. Yeah. It's okay. Yeah.
Just tell your friends.
Yeah. So listen, I'm stalling. I got to be honest with you. I'm stalling here to get to this next topic because it's so overwhelming. It's so horrifying, and it's so big. And we both know that everyone right now is I don't want to say saturated with it, but this is so much of the headline news right now. And of course, we're talking about Israel coming under attack on Saturday by Hamas. And it is, and I'm not showing, we've decided not to show any of those videos and images that I know that you're all seeing over and over again. They're horrific. They are brutal. They're devastating. The whole thing. Clay, there's so much to unpack here. I'm going to throw it on you and make you kind of take the lead on this one. Don't I suck?
This is a topic that's horrifying. It's horrific. I mean, the entire thing, you know, we watched it unfold as we all woke up, you know, on Saturday. You know, some of the images that we're showing are, you know, tame in comparison.
That's it. Yeah.
But the reality is that, you know, I've seen, I think, numbers anywhere from 2,200 to 5,000 rockets launched into Israel, specifically, mostly into Jerusalem. You know, the numbers continue to climb. You know, we record generally like this week, we're recording on Tuesday, you know, so we're 4 days removed from the attack. The death toll is, you know, over, you know, hundreds. It's in the hundreds. The wounded is in the thousands. Number of Americans dead, unfortunately, is at 11 as we speak. There are countless number of hostages that are still trying to be accounted for in some form or fashion. And it continues to go. So if you're not clear on how this all unfolded, what we would refer to as kind of that the order of battle in this thing is it was an artillery attack, a rocket attack that came in. And let me tell you something, 5,000 rockets, as somebody who's been shot at by rockets more times than I can count, in usually small numbers. And I say small numbers in the, you know, usually less than double digits, somewhere 12 or less, sometimes ones and twos and all the way up to 10 or 12. The effort that that took to set up those types of, those numbers of rockets and those to launch that in any kind of coordinated fashion was Herculean on the part of the Palestinian, the Hamas organization. Mm-hmm. So that's one. That was not an easy, that was not a throw together thing. And right. We've heard about this. They received, you know, a help aid from Iran in the planning and preparation for this. And then there was infiltration that came after the rockets kind of subsided or at least lessened. So you had Hamas fighters coming out of the Palestinian enclaves, you know, Golan Heights, Gaza Strip and those kinds of places. And then they infiltrated into Israel proper, some on foot, a lot via motorcycles, stolen vehicles. There's even reports and pictures of hang gliders, powered hang gliders that they used. There was use of drones by Hamas, both from what I've seen, armed as in capability to launch munitions, and then also as suicide type drones where they were kamikazing the drones straight into targets, almost as a guided missile kind of a thing. And then again, the infiltration by people, and that's when really the gunfire started, the kidnapping started, the murdering of families on vacations, the attacks into the music festival and all these other horrific things that happened over the subsequent, you know, really, I think it probably in intensity, probably about 8 hours or so. And then it hit the news line and then the rest of the world started to wake up to it. And it, you know, and we all got the first taste of it. I will say this off the top. I have heard a lot of blame go to the Biden administration about this $6 billion released to Iran and that somehow having an effect on this attack. I will tell you, there is no connection between the two. I say that with all confidence. Mm-hmm. That money, as I said, the Herculean effort that this took to plan this operation, coordinate it, set up the logistics for all of this stuff was in motion and in planning and moving forward well before September 9th or 11th when that $6 billion was reported to be released. There's even reports that it hasn't been released yet because it's being
that's
the proxy in the UN.
That's what I had heard as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as much as people want to blame the Biden administration and the $6 billion for funding this attack in Israel, I will take that off the table. One had nothing to do with the other. Now, I'm not downplaying the $6 billion, right?
No, of course.
Bad diplomacy, all the things, that all stands. But that really had nothing to do with this attack in Israel. So separate the
and
two.
Accuracy matters. You know, it doesn't matter. I could be, and am, of course, you know, very anti-Biden. I mean, I'm not saying anything that's a surprise to anyone. I think we all know that quite well. But, you know, as always, truth and facts matter to me. And you, of course, more than anything else. So, you know, I just want facts and truth. So I'm so glad that you were actually able to provide that, because I had read that and that was actually one of my questions for you, because I do defer to you on this line of things for sure. You can defer to me when it comes to talking about country music stars, you know, like we're going to give you this one. Yeah. And, you know, so that was, I've got it on my board here, my little whiteboard, because I'm old school. It's not even a computer screen. It's just a literal whiteboard. But that was one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because that's what, of course, we're all hearing. And if you're just a lay person like me, just scrolling your news feed, you know, and you're seeing and we're seeing, you know, $6 billion went to Iran and they got to use it however they wanted. And this is how they used it. And now here's some balance to that, some counterbalance to that, which is important.
Well, and again, facts matter and words matter. And like you said, it's in your news feed, right? It's in people's scroll and social media and whatever news that, you know, they get. Unfortunately, a lot of our politicians, elected officials, did not take that breath, do that little bit of analysis that it took to piece this all together. And there have been elected officials, truthfully on the conservative side, that have come out and said, this is the $6 billion. This is President Biden's fault. They laid it on his feet. And reality is they're wrong. They are. Right. They're just wrong. It's one has nothing to do with the other. I don't know if it was ignorance or you know, they just saw too much of an opportunity to jump on and couldn't pass it up and, sure, you know, spoke before they thought. But it was reckless on their part and truthfully irresponsible. So all of those folks, all those elected officials that tried to pin that $6 million to make that connection between that and Iran and then Iran helping Hamas and then Hamas conducting the attack, that's not happening. There's no link.
Right.
There.
The chain is not correct. Yeah.
No, the timing's impossible.
Okay. Now, talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on the Biden White House response, reaction, and all of that. Because, you know, I'm just reading before we came on, I pulled up an article that he, I believe it was just today. So it says he was nearly 2 hours late for a press conference to update on all of this, gives the update and then just kind of gone. And now the day after the attacks, it says that the Bidens threw a barbecue at the White House. Now, we've talked about the tone deafness and the inappropriateness and the, you know, well, tone deafness to serious events going on in the world of this White House. And boy, talk about a perfect example of that. And, you know, I know supporters are going to turn around and say, well, listen, you know, life goes on here. You know, nobody just stops living and stops doing things. You're talking about the President of the United States. You're talking about, you know, thousands of people injured, murdered, hostage situation. You know, you're talking about catastrophic events going on. And throwing a barbecue with a live band and, you know, like all of these just nice festive things going on is worse than tacky. It is tone deaf and it's so incredibly offensive. So now that I gave my feelings, what are you thinking?
So here's the thing that I will say about the time it took to respond, a response from the White House. So think of the context of what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now. So there's turmoil in the House. We have no Speaker of the House, right? That affects business as usual. We have a brand new chairman of the Joint Chiefs, brand new, right? So General Milley just retired.
Right.
I'll reserve comments on that. But he's out, right? So we got a brand new chairman. So there's a lot of turmoil and turnover in those offices. And then, of course, you've got, you know, the goings on of Washington, D.C. that happen on the daily, right? It doesn't even matter if the president's in the White House or not. There's still stuff right. going on. But I would also take it in the context of 9/11. And that is, if you remember back, there was, you know, what was President Bush doing? He was sitting in a room with a bunch of kids reading a story, right? And he took a lot of heat for his lack of reaction upon being told about the attacks, right?
Yes.
You know, I can see the image. The guy.
Oh, me too. Ear, me too. As soon as you said
it. Very stoic and no, like, jump up, hey, kids, sorry, I got to go. You know,
right.
And, you know, he didn't book out of the room. And he took a lot of shit for that. So there is taking all that into account, the fact that it took the White House a little while to piece something together, to get a good feel for what they wanted to say. You know, intelligence information was still coming in. So, and truthfully, I'm sure Israel's first priority was not updating the United States on what was going on. Right?
Sure. Good point.
Their government, even our embassy, I'm sure was like, you know, code red, condition one, shelter in place. Right. And they were all kind of huddled for their lives. So I'm sure direct reporting to the White House, even through CIA and some of the other agencies, was probably a bit delayed and very unclear. Mm-hmm. So I will give a grain of salt or give the White House a half a pass on the amount of time that it took them to respond or to provide anything. I will not give them, very much like you said, the pass on the barbecue. That I think you're right. That should have been one of those. Chief staff of the White House grabs the, you know, the protocol people and pulls them in and goes, listen, shut it off. I know it's a bad thing. Reschedule it, put it on another day. I don't care. but we can't do this tomorrow. It looks horrible.
Right. Optics alone.
Yeah, for sure. It does. It's a bad look. But here's the other thing that I read today is that the president was also being interviewed for 2 days about the classified documents in his office in Philadelphia. You didn't hear that.
I did not.
He sat for interviews. I think it was over 2 days, and it was either over Saturday, Sunday, or over Sunday, Monday. He was sitting for interviews on both days with Department of Justice to talk about those classified documents in his foundation or whatever it's called that they had the offices in Philadelphia where they opened an old broom closet as they were getting ready to move out and found classified stuff from when he was vice president. So he was, I don't think deposed is the right word. He wasn't being deposed. It wasn't a deposition at the time, but he was being interviewed concerning those while this was going on. So he was a little bit out of pocket on top of everything else.
Right.
Could you make a viable leap and say that's a lot for him physically, mentally, you know, right? Wake up Saturday morning early, find out all this stuff's going on in Israel. He's not getting the information he needs. I'm sure because there's no speaker of the House, I'm sure every committee in the House of Representatives was screaming at the White House for information, intelligence, updates, and all those things. So they were probably fielding 10 times the number of phone calls they would have on a normal day. And then 2 days of him being interviewed and then his barbecue appearance. And I'm sure like Monday morning, he probably woke up more tired than he was the Friday prior.
No doubt. And all of his naps in between.
But it speaks to his capability and capacity to manage stuff like this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then, you know, so what is the U.S. response? And that's, you know, that's kind of the next step in all of this is, right. You know, and I've got friends, you know, who, you know, contacts and things that are in Israel and have been in Israel. IDF, former IDF, you know, Israeli Defense Force folks, and reports are not necessarily good. And this is a country where, you know, everybody serves in the military or serves the government, and a vast majority of them serve in the military in Israel. Male, female, doesn't matter. And oh, by the way, everybody carries a gun. It's not like a concealed pistol. Like this is, there are gun racks at the Pizza Hut. Like this is, this is life in Israel. But it sounds very much like the Israeli Defense Force kind of shit the bed on their response on this. They did not respond accordingly. And again, that's just through my contacts and people that I know. The reports are not favorable to the IDF. Now, give them 36 hours, you know, they put their pants and their boots on and they came back swinging pretty hard.
Right.
You know, and Bibi declared war as kind of everybody assumed he would because he's that kind of guy.
Right.
And IDF's back on the offensive. So where does that leave the U.S.? And our move right now is the carrier strike group or carrier group that was in the Med has been moved to the eastern end of the Mediterranean off the coast of Israel. And what does that capability, you know, offer, you know, or what does that, you know, put in within range that's got United States written on it.
Right. So
you've got an entire aircraft carrier full of airplanes with all of their munition capabilities. You've also got all of their intercept and intelligence collecting capability aircraft that are, you know, on that carrier. You've got every ship in that fleet that has the capability to launch Tomahawk cruise missiles. You've got a whole bunch of Marines. And then I would imagine some special operations capability. If it wasn't on there to begin with, I believe it damn sure is now. There's probably some SEAL capability that's on those boats somewhere. So you've got the, you know, the full spectrum of capabilities parked right off the coast of Israel. But what do we do besides park off the coast of Israel? And that's the billion-dollar question, the $6 billion
Absolutely. Question. And, you know, another question is, you know, where are we in? I mean, we just talked recently about the Army missing recruitment goals, you know, so we're talking about depleting and not just the Army, of course, all of our military depleted resources in so many ways. I mean, we've had so much aid going to Ukraine. And now, you know, what can we actually do? I mean, how thin are we spread at this point? And what are our capabilities even?
So my guess would be, after what we have given to Ukraine, is that anything that we dip into now is critical. I would tell you that what was offered up, my understanding is what was offered up to Ukraine were some things that we could afford, quote unquote, afford to give away, Humvees and even MRAP vehicles, mine resistant vehicles that we had been using in Iraq and Afghanistan, that we probably needed in smaller numbers, those kinds of things. There were other things that were pretty important, pretty critical pieces of equipment, some, artillery and some other things that were given, some Bradley fighting vehicles that were given to Ukraine. But I would tell you that what was given was what we had to spare. And now if we give anything to Israel, and I don't think they've asked yet, not that we haven't offered, I don't know if we've offered or not, but anything that we give to them now is probably in the, you know, we're dipping into, you know, the layman's term is war stock. That's not really what it is, but it is, you know, what we would need to fight, to be able to fight somewhere like the Middle East or against China or against North Korea or something like that. You know, we're digging deeper into our stockpile of things that we do have available. I wouldn't say that they're, you know, overage. Like, it's not like, oh, well, we got a whole, you know, yard full of tanks over here. Just send them that stuff. We don't have that. That doesn't exist. Everything that we've got is committed to something. And now, you know, if we offer anything to Israel, it'll be digging into that something. It'll be digging into whatever we are committed against somewhere else. And that's where things start to get dicey, equipment wise. Now, personnel wise, I don't know where this carrier group is in their sea tour. I don't know if they're fresh into a sea tour or if they're on the tail end of a sea tour. Are they going to get extended in their tour? You know, have they been out there for a year already or 18 months or however long it's supposed to be? And now all of a sudden somebody says, oh, hey, by the way, you got to stay off the coast of Israel until we tell you to come home. And now you've got folks that, you know, were planning on coming home who, you know, and maybe, I hate to say it, these kind of are a coin flip. Sometimes those are the missions that people who never would have reenlisted are like, hell yeah, that was best. Right. That was awesome. I'm doing that again. I'm going to reenlist. And then you've got the people who are on the fence who are like, yeah, I'm probably going to reenlist. And then you say, well, you got to stay here another 9 months. They're like, you can kiss my ass. Like I'm not, you know, and then they, as soon as they get back to shore, they're gone, right? That's the end of their service. So, but it really depends on where that carrier group is in their duty tour, in their cruise, as they call it, and how much time they had left. But that has a potential impact.
And of course, obviously, this is all speculation and all the possibilities and maybes of what could happen and what we could do if those next steps are required. And like you said, you know, don't know, hasn't been asked that I'm aware of, that you're aware of at this moment. You know, again, it's an ever changing situation. We just don't know where it's going to go and what's going to happen. And of course, you know, one look at the news and the social media feeds, you can see that the conflict between Palestine supporters here and Israeli supporters here, the clashes at the protests and the fighting, and it's, you know, it's, there's that extension here of those feelings and tensions, and you know, I think from, you know, taking this away for a moment from like the political and military aspect of it to the more human and people aspect of it, you know, anyone, and I think this is stating the obvious, and I know it's been stated already before, that anyone that is cheering and supporting the slaughter and brutalization of children and elderly and innocent people is nothing short of a monster and pure evil. You can support whatever your political or social or religious beliefs are, and that's fine. But to cheer the absolute horrendous, vicious slaughter of innocent people is just beyond vile. And you know, that I tell you, of all the things, that's probably the most disturbing of all, just to see things like that. And you know, and they splashed across, and it, we do need to see it, as awful as it is. And even though I've chosen, you know, for us to not show all of those images and videos, you know, with the very, like you said, the very mild one that we show, just to kind of give that overview of what's happening. You run that line, I guess, of either being desensitized to it because you see it too much, or being shocked into, you know, needing to understand. And I'm not quite sure where we're at. I think collectively we're at that place of collective horror and deep sadness and anger at what's happening to innocent people.
Yeah, I'm with you. And it's, you know, like I said, the you know, whatever, it's been 2,200 to 5,000 rockets that were launched in there. Again, that's something that everybody who served in Iraq and Afghanistan over the last 20 years was subjected to. I'm not, you know, I wasn't bragging before. It was it was commonplace. If you know somebody who served in one of those two places and they didn't take rockets at least one time while they were over there, they're an anomaly, because it happened to everybody. But those things are unguided and indiscriminate. So take that into account. 5,000 rockets with high explosives just launched into Jerusalem, just aiming at whatever they're aimed at.
Anything.
Right? These are not precision laser guided, GPS guided, anything. There's nothing precision about it. They literally just launched anywhere from 2,000 to 5,000 rockets into populated areas. Indiscriminate killing, no rhyme or reason to it. They just launched them. Now, the reports that I've seen about the Israeli response has been more controlled. I'm actually a little surprised, because I thought that they were going to go absolute scorched earth and unleash hell, and they really haven't. There has been some response, don't get me wrong, and I can promise that I'm sure there are some Palestinians who have been injured and or killed in the response. And I'm not waving that away, but the Israelis have done a number of precision strike type things, right? Guided, you know, munitions to target specific bad guys or buildings with specific bad guys in them, where they haven't gone scorched earth and just, you know, laid waste to everything. They haven't done that. So their response has been measured, which I'm both shocked at, and I admire them for doing it and having that much self-control, you know, in the days and hours following the attack. You know, to touch on what you talked about with the arguments, we've seen protests, we've seen, you know, marches, we've seen U.S. Congress people with, you know, Palestinian flags outside of their office. You know, we're seeing all of that. Nobody can justify this. I don't care what your feelings are about Israel and, you know, whether they belong there or not, whether they, you know, that land was stolen from the Palestinians. And, you know, you can go back to whatever history book up to and including the Bible to read about the conflict between those two populations that's existed for centuries, about who owns it, who should be there, whose rightful home it is. All you could argue that back and forth. And they've both done some evil and vile things, you know, go back to the Crusades, go back as far as you want. This is another one of those acts that you cannot justify. And I've seen it. I've actually had it directed towards me in a couple of occasions where people, it's the butt Trump argument. Right. This is the butt Israel argument. And it's a passive aggressive, oh, this is horrible what Hamas did. And they killed all these people. And it's terrible. But Israel, you know, and it's like, no, I don't want to hear it. I don't. I don't want to hear it. No justification, no criminalization of Israel in this entire thing.
Right.
I'm not buying it. And I don't stand with anybody who uses that as any kind of justification to what happened on Saturday. It's horrific. It's inexcusable. And truthfully, I hope that they find anybody and every single solitary person who took part in this. And it's a horrific, long and painful death for them, because that's exactly what they deserve.
Yep. I'm right there with you. No argument here from me, for sure. We are same page entirely. And I like you said, the butt Trump style arguments here, they have no place and no home for it. I don't care. Barbarianism is what it is. Evil is what it is. And there is no other word for the way that this was all done and what's continuing to go on right now. I mean, you can't justify. I have even a hard time talking about the ones that I've read of the children, babies.
Yeah.
And I'm going to leave it at that. If y'all want to go look it up, I can't. As a mother, as a grandmother, I can't even go there. And to know that this is the horror that people are living through right now, no justification, pure evil, period.
Yeah, I will blow your mind a little bit with some speculation.
Mm-hmm.
Here's something, and people call me a conspiracy theorist. I threw some stuff out the other day trying to connect some dots for some folks. Or at least put the dots out on paper and let people come to their own, connect their own dots and come mm-hmm. to a conclusion. But in this week, we've had a number of things happen. We had the Speaker of the House get removed. So the House is not operating at normal capacity. The Intelligence Committees, House Armed Services Committee, all those things are not functioning like they normally do. I'm not saying they're not functioning. They're just not functioning as they normally do.
Right.
But you've also got, the administration doing a complete 180 on the border wall. And let me tell you something, that is not without provocation. Something spurred them. And let me tell you something, it wasn't the mayor of New York, and it wasn't the mayor of Boston, and it certainly wasn't the mayor of Chicago or the Teamsters who were working out at O'Hare Airport. They are not the ones who made the administration go, we should probably build a wall. Something else spurred that. And my spidey sense tells me that there's some intelligence, and I'm not saying this because I know anything or know anybody that said anything. This is just, a lifetime of experience, with this stuff. My spidey sense tells me that there is a piece of intelligence out there that the administration said, holy crap, we got to do something. And this is about to get really, really bad. Hey, we need to do this to cover our ass, which is another truthful, probability. So to do the 180 out, not just the 180 out of, the last 6 years, the wall is racist, the wall is inhumane, it's un-American, it's all these other things. And then all the speculation by everybody that they're just letting them in so they can make them into voters and then, retain power and all this other stuff. And then all of a sudden they go, oh shit. Hey, we not only do we need a wall, we need it right now. Like, we're going to put in all the environmental waivers. We're going to do all of these things. We know we just sold all the construction materials to, back to Home Depot or wherever they got them from. But like, we need to rebuild. We need to build this thing. We need to do it ASAP. That, and then this happens a couple of days later, the attack by Hamas into Israel. There's some dots there that really bother me, but they also frighten me a little bit. I would just, and again, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I just see things for what they are and I connect my own dots. You can buy into it. You can tell me I'm a nutbag. I get it. It sounds a little absurd to a lot of people. And it may sound a lot absurd to an even larger number of people. I don't know. But the reality is that's what I see. And I am concerned about the safety and sovereignty of this nation, because we've had hundreds of thousands, millions of undocumented, unvetted, immigrants that have moved across an unsecured border for the last number of years that truly have embedded themselves into our society, who are capable of doing a lot.
Yes. A lot. Yeah, they're virtually untraceable because they're undocumented. So, I mean, it's, I don't think that's conspiracy theorizing at all. I think that is almost, you know, to be sounding like a 12-year-old for a second. Duh. Right? I mean, it's like, of course. I mean, this is not even vaguely surprising, or would not be vaguely surprising. And I'm gonna put the chapter marker in the notes for everybody for the moment that you said that, so they can reflect on that if and when need be, so that we can have another one of those told you so moments. And I honestly hope that we do not have I told you so moment. I would prefer that we didn't on something like that. But yeah, I mean, if they want to tell you that you're putting on a tinfoil hat, I'll fight them for you.
Yeah, I don't want to be right. I really don't want to be right. I really don't. And I will certainly not jump up and down and give myself a pat on the back for being right. But I hope to God that I am not right. But that's just what my gut and my experience kind of sees happening. So,
yeah, I feel you. All right, guys, I would love to tell you that I'm going to take you into this really lighthearted, easy conversation next, but we're not yet. We will. We do have something for you coming up that if you don't chuckle a little bit, are you even alive? But first, we're going to talk a little bit about a big, huge thing that has been, you know, almost a nonstop topic of late, and that is artificial intelligence, AI. I had to explain what AI was, just like Kamala made sure everybody, you know, understood, just in case. I should have done it in her voice, right? We don't need to hear that.
So you talked about this. We were picking on her a couple of weeks ago, and you know, she got put in charge of the, you know, yet another office. It was whatever the gun violence. You know,
that's right. That's right. They gave it like a really long name, like the Committee of Gun Violence Prevention. Blah blah. It was like a really long name. Yeah. It was crazy. But that was, I guess, because she tanked AI. I don't know. She's still supposedly in charge of AI. I mean, they put her in charge, and then they have Joe sitting in on one of these conferences or meetings or talks, whatever it is. And it was another place where he was falling asleep at, or I'm sorry, allegedly, apparently, seemingly falling asleep. But so go figure. But AI, man, my overwhelming feeling about this is that it is bad news, that no good can come of it. But even having said that, I know that there are some pros to the use of artificial intelligence. And one is the easy, fast, readily available knowledge and information, and taking some of that burden. I mean, it's a burden to learn things. That's a silly statement, but I'm going to stick with it for a minute. It makes this level of intelligence of information so quickly, readily available that I can't help but be a little bit fascinated by that. But the list of cons are really long. What are you feeling about artificial intelligence and the use of, like, you know, ChatGPT and all of these other types of systems that are taking the place, I mean, because you can't call it any other thing, taking the place of humans?
No, I, for sure. I think so. One, you know, I don't think that we, you know, what you said is very telling, right? You're very curious, right? You look at it and you go, wow, what can that do? Right. And curiosity killed the cat. That's kind of where we are, because, you know, this is almost like the cloning, right? You remember the cloning with the sheep, whatever that was,
right?
You know, they did it, and the whole world went, whoa, like, are we really here? Like, is this where we need to be right now? And I think, you know, we all stepped back because we took kind of, I think, some medical information out of that. And I think that probably helped in the further development of medicine. But there hasn't been cloning, right? Like that kind of, you know, stop. I don't see that same sort of human response to AI that we saw to cloning, which was, this is probably bad and we probably don't need to mess with this. The opposite, I think, is happening with AI, which is, well, what can it do this? Well, what about this? Can we, let's try this, right? And I don't think that we are mature enough to control AI, like to control our application of AI. Truth in lending, if there was any conscience at all, ChatGTP or GPT or whatever it's called wouldn't even be available to the public right now. Because somebody would have looked at it and said, let's keep this under wraps for a while, or at least in a controlled environment, and let's not just launch it out there to the people. Because you do have a lot of people who just look at it and go, it's harmless. Let's see. Here, and I'll give you this. And here's your funny. I know you said we weren't going to do funny, but this one's kind of funny.
I like funny.
I have this on my phone. So somebody, you know, grabbed AI and said, you know, let me see if I can get the actual question. They asked AI to write a duet in the styles of John Lennon and George Harrison.
Okay? Oh, boy.
Both, obviously, in the hereafter at this point.
Sure.
Neither of them alive to do this. This is, and I'm just going to read you the first verse.
Okay.
This is John Lennon. Okay. Well, George, my friend, let's sing a song today about peace and love in our own special way. We'll harmonize our voices like in the old days and spread a message in this world of craze. Now, I'm not a huge Beatles fan. I am enough of a Beatles fan.
I can tell you.
John Lennon is not writing, right?
No. So,
you know, as accurate as AI. Now, it produced an entire song, chorus, three verses. It's all in here. So does it have the capability to produce a song? Yes. Does it have the capability to reproduce what John Lennon and George Harrison were capable of? Clearly
Heck
not.
Heck no.
Right? But somebody asked the question. And really, that's the message. It's not that it was a horrible song, but it's that somebody thought deep enough to say, let's see if we can recreate the two dead Beatles.
Right.
Right? That's creepy, right? And that's publicly available, that's indiscriminate, that's no filter, that's nobody saying, you know, hey, man, that's probably a bad idea. Right. Not only did they do it, they published it. So we as a society, as a race of humans, I don't think have the capability to control ourselves when it comes to AI. And I think that is what's going to get us in trouble.
Yeah, I think you made, you know, the most important valid point, like the counter argument to it's harmless. It's harmless on its own, but because we're people and we by our nature have to ruin everything. Like we have to F with everything. And, you know, that of course is a mild, entertaining, funny version of that. And I've heard, you know, kind of similar things like people getting AI to write like a romance based off of, you know, the information that they plug in or whatever. And it's cheesy and terrible and funny and really bad and all those things. But, you know, but then you start scooching over into those darker areas, those gray areas that become black areas. And, you know, people are using it to write books, which is a little ironic after hearing something like that, you know. So now you're just...
I'm out of a job. Are you kidding me?
Exactly. I mean, it's like you're dumbing down people, you know. And I think that's probably where I have two lanes of discontent with it. One is that I think it does dumb us down. It makes us lazy. And, you know, as much as I like that quick access to information, remember looking, you know, in the Encyclopedia Britannica and stuff like that, you had to look things up and you had to read them and you had to like absorb it and understand it. And now, you know, information is so transient in our brains. It's like, oh, I need the answer to something right now. Here's the answer. Got the answer. Okay, now I'm over it. Next. And I don't, you know, I'll speak for myself. I don't know if my retention skills are what they once were, you know, because the information is just kind of like passing through so quickly. And, you know, so that's a danger in and of its sense, the whole dumbing down of society. And I think somebody will probably argue that, well, you need a human to input the information for the artificial intelligence to use and create from. So you're still, you know, there's going to be arguments back and forth for it all the time. But I think ultimately, much in the way of social media, all of the internet, all of these things, the technology is great. There are definite benefits and goods that have and do come of it. But because of human nature, the negative and the bad, I think ultimately will probably outweigh. And then, you know, and the other lane for me with discontent with this is, you know, I'm a Christian, and I feel like there's a lot of dark, and now I'm going to be the one that's going to get made fun of online, you know, so I'll take my hits too. I feel that there is an inherent evilness to all of this, and the use of it. And you know, you take it a step further from the chat GPT, and I still don't even know if I'm saying that right either. But then you take it to the next level where people are creating these artificial intelligent, you know, these robots, essentially these lifelike people like creations, and they're using them to substitute people. I mean, you've seen all the weird things that people are buying these dolls, essentially like high tech dolls, to be their life partners. There's so much creepy, weird stuff that this encourages and inspires. Ultimately, I think it's bad. If you're going to like hold me down to it, I would say ultimately it is bad news.
Yeah. I mean, for all the sci-fi action movie folks out there, Skynet, right? Mm-hmm. You've seen the Terminator movies. It's Skynet. Like that's, we all see it. It's all the inevitability, whether it's true or not, I don't know, but that's what we've all grown up with. So, you know, AI leads to the point where, you know, artificial intelligence becomes self-aware and it mm-hmm. understands what it is. And then it realizes that it doesn't need humans around anymore. And then mm-hmm. decides to exterminate us all, right? That's the horrific like end state to all of this.
Right.
But again, you know, here's, you know, backtracking a little bit, two sides to the same coin. I know this in the world of education right now. Teachers, let's just not, you know, anywhere from collegiate down to elementary level, teachers are using AI to generate lesson plans. Right. Mm. Because like everybody else, they're on a timeline. Right. And it's, sure. you know, it helps them. It does a lot of work for them. Right. But you right. will, they'll be like, hey, I need to do a lesson plan about, you know, Shakespeare or, you know, Romeo and Juliet or Caesar or whatever, you know, and, you know, AI will put together a whole lesson plan for them. It'll be done. Right. It's done in really a very short amount of time. And then the teachers will turn around and tell the kids, you owe me a paper on Romeo and Juliet. Oh, by the way, you can't use ChatGPT to generate yourself, right?
Right.
So, you know, and so we're using it mm-hmm. and then we're blocking it at the same time. And I think in the best sense that, you know, the teachers are saying, listen, you still need to learn this stuff. And there is, you know, value in you reading it, and there's value in you developing the paper and writing the paper on your own, because that's a mm-hmm. life skill that you need. But at the same time, they're doing exactly the opposite and saying, yeah, mm-hmm. I read, you know, Romeo and Juliet in high school, and I read it in college, and I wrote two papers on it, and I read it last year when I taught the same class, and I'm not reading it again, and so I'm just going to come up with this lesson plan. So it's the catch 22, you know, and I'm not picking on education. That's just right. a very clear delineation, or an opportunity to have a clear delineation between, you know, application and restriction, really in the same breath. So right. that's you know, it's an interesting thing. I'm not an advocate for unsupervised, unregulated AI. I think there's a ton of danger in it, and I think your sentiment about us effing things up at the first opportunity, you know, listen, I don't think it's a secret to anybody. There's a dark web. There's a dark web for, I hate to say a reason, but it exists because people have, there's an inherent evilness in humanity. That's why the dark web exists. Yes. I know, by the way, even on the normal web, you know, probably what's the most predominant thing on the normal web? Porn. Like, I don't think that's a secret to anybody.
Nope.
So, you know, we will find what is potentially the, up to this point, the greatest advancement in human history in the internet, which is information availability, accessibility of information. And we you know, dumb it down to, you know, seeing somebody naked.
Yeah, exactly.
And, and AI is going to be the same way. You already talked about it. People are using it because, you know, I'm too weird or I'm too lazy or I'm too whatever to go out and actually meet someone. So you know what? I'm just going to order one. It's going to come from Amazon. I'm going to plug it in. I'll put in whatever information I need to, and then I'll just have a life partner and it'll just be easy. And it's horrible.
Right.
But it has the potential to be the end of humanity if we don't take a deep breath and really think about what we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Clay, you mentioned something about naked people on the internet, and that just reminded me of a
story.
While
I'm taking a drink of water, I almost spit on the
computer. So I want everybody to put their beverage down. Do not take a sip right now because of what I'm about to tell you. I swear to you, trust me. So there's a news report out right now, this minute, that you can look up yourself, that tells us that Frank Biden, who is the younger brother of our president, Joe Biden, there's naked pictures of him out on the internet on a gay dating app. And before you say, stop, Elsa, you're making that up. It's not true. It's just a rumor. No. He confirmed that that is indeed his naked body on a gay dating app. And he's fine with it. He doesn't care. He's not saying he posted it, though. He's saying that he was hacked. His phone was hacked. Somebody hacked his phone and got the naked picture of him from, oh, by the way, it was just from 2018. We're not talking about a picture of him from, you know, 30 years ago. I forget how old he is, but let's just say he's seasoned. He's a seasoned fella. And so the photo was from 2018, apparently. And yeah, he is buck ass naked out on the internet. And if anybody cares to go see that, and aren't you glad you weren't taking a sip of water when I told you about that, it'd be a big old mess. So Clay, you're going to go hunt that down and see for yourself. I can't even say that without I can't even say it without laughing.
No, I, you know, listen, for all the listeners and viewers out there, Elsa hit me with this literally right before we started recording. I hadn't heard anything about this, didn't know a single thing about this, you know, and my first question was, did he post the photos? And then you told me no, somebody hacked his phone and put them up there. Which I guess is a little better, you know. But no, I am definitely not going to go hunt these down. I have absolutely no interest in this. But, you know, it's just another thing with the Biden name on it that just is bad, bad optics all the way around. You know,
what is it with these Biden men taking their clothes off and posting stuff on the internet? Are they that proud of their bodies? I mean, I feel ill when I say that. I just like cringe.
Listen, Hunter's just bad judgment, right? Just all the way up and down, bad judgment. Like that guy, you know, you can say, well, he was under the influence. Well, just getting under the influence is bad judgment. Right. In the way that he was doing it. I mean, he was, you know, smoking crack and all that other stuff. And, you know, I would imagine bad judgment, any judgment goes out the window at that point. So, you know, the leap from there to prostitutes, to everything else that came along with it, I think it's just kind of, you know, kind of rolls all together.
Right.
But this, you know, I it just all looks bad. It looks bad. It sounds bad. It continues to be bad. It just,
yeah, you can't really, there's no spin on this. Like, how could you spin this? You know, well, he took a negative picture to send to his virtual doctor's office so that they could, thinking that's not going to be the case, you know.
I don't know.
2018, that was before COVID, so he could have gotten to the doctor's office if the doctor needed to see a mole or something going on. I don't know. But yeah, I'm feeling like this guy in his, you know, mid to late 60s or 70s, whatever it is, decided, hey, I'm gonna take a naked pic of myself and I don't know what, do what with it. And then, of course, it gets hacked.
I'm done. I got nothing.
Yeah.
I'm not chasing it down. I don't want to know what it is. I don't want to know what the photos are. I
have to be honest. I will not look up the pictures. I have no interest in seeing that, but I'm very curious, just morbidly curious of how they're going to spin this, if they're even going to bother. You know, the Biden way is just to pretend it didn't happen and not answer any questions about it and just, you know, walk away and pretend they didn't hear the question. And so it's probably going to be that. But all I know is if I have to know this story, so do y'all.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
I appreciate you sharing. That's great.
Anytime. Listen, I mean, we're out of time here. I mean, we have other stories, but we're going to have to save them for another day. That's okay. It's good. You know, it's better than having dead air, right? And we got nothing to say, just staring at each other going, I don't know. But that was not the case. We had more than we could possibly talk about in one show. And we went from the curious and interesting to the very serious and tragic and upsetting. Right back over to some silliness. And I'm glad we ended on that, even though it was, you know, burns that image in our brains. I'm glad we ended on a light note.
Yeah. Again, another week chock full of stuff. You know, it's obviously everything that happened in Israel is horrific, and it's not something that you and I go looking for. But it's also something that we won't ignore. So, bad that we had to cover it, but it's obviously a necessity. But again, thanks everybody for joining us and listening in. You know, it's always great. And please provide feedback. You know, if you think I'm a nut job, fine. That's good. Please draw your own conclusions. I'd be interested in other people's opinions. So feedback's always welcome. But thanks again, everybody. And as always from me, you know, check out the book. But just as a life motto, keep moving, keep shooting.
Absolutely. I love it. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Everything that Clay said, I'm just going to say ditto. So take care and we'll see you in the next episode. Bye-bye.
Bye.